In 1998, a washed-up DJ started the diary, an effort to stay dry. Calling his written screed The Amazing Adventures of Sober Man, this socially maladjusted individual began to see bats on the second day. He banged out some 217 pages on an electric typewriter with a malfunctioning L key. This resulted in a number of sentences containing the mysterious word Akoho, but he stayed off the bottle before relapsing 10 days in, living a tired and wasteful life that resulted in a number of arrests and angry tears. This is not his story.
Okay, so I am here with Shauna Reed, who is the author of The Amazing Adventures of Diet Girl. I think there may have been a few modifiers you had in the title that were perhaps taken out, but how are you doing, Shauna?
Doing very well, thank you.
First off, let's start with a rather elaborate question. Your journal was initiated on an anonymous basis, completely separate from the more public place of What's New Pussycat, which is your blog. And the grand irony here is that here you have this anonymous journal that then becomes public in book form. I'm wondering if for you the pursuit of truth along these particular lines comes more naturally when you write in an anonymous fashion. Have you had difficulties perhaps returning to this uncensored terrain when your name is in fact on the particular book or essay or even the blog or whatnot? Or
It's quite ironic the blog that was so desperately anonymous before, where I would put Photoshop blobs across my face so nobody could recognize me.
Yeah.
And now it's completely the opposite, where everyone from my mother to my colleagues to the guy next door reads it. I'm finding it quite difficult to write now because it's not the spewing out everything under the sun place that it used to be. Yeah. But I think that was 8 years ago when I started it, and I don't think I necessarily need that anonymity anymore.
Yeah.
At the time when I started, I was 350 pounds and I was desperately ashamed and overwhelmed by that. And I didn't want to let on to the people around me just how much it affected me, because I had this sort of happy-go-lucky demeanor you don't want to burden people with this depressing stuff. So the blog was just my little haven to be finally be honest with myself about how I felt.
But burdening people, this is an interesting word that you use. I mean, do you feel that all of your writing in general involves burdening people? I mean, certainly I've read your stuff for quite a long time and I've never felt any sense of burden, and I'm wondering how this interior sense of burdening people. Do you still feel this way?
No, I don't feel that way anymore. I think it just goes to show just how crap my self-esteem was back when I started it. Because when What's New Pussycat was my original blog, it was where I kind of separated that my physical self from everything that was happening in my head. It was where I could be funny, and it didn't matter what I weighed. I felt so free to be my true self there. Whereas I felt the need to keep. When I decided to do something about my weight, I didn't feel comfortable letting that audience know that this was the real me, this is this problem I was dealing with, and so I just had this ridiculous two separate online lives. It was very hard keeping them up, to be honest.
Yeah, you had to compartmentalize
Totally compartmentalize my life, because my offline friends and family didn't know anything about this diet blog. The diet blog didn't know about the non-diet blog, and vice versa. So I was just keeping all these ridiculous secrets, but that's just the way I felt at the time, even though it seems quite strange to me now that I felt that way.
It's interesting. I want to actually talk about this notion of self-esteem. I mean, you were fighting, I think, esteem issues on multiple fronts. I mean, you had the weight loss and the job scenario and the unemployment. I mean, how much do you feel that, for example, your employment history and your employment scenario is tied into the obstacle of losing weight? I mean, you point out that you're staying busy at work. Didn't give you time to think about Kit Kats, hamburgers, and your general sense of fatness or general state of fatness. And I'm curious, when did you detect these particular connections, or by compartmentalizing them, as you indicate in your last answer, this was a way for you to, I suppose, tie all the various threads together?
Yeah, I think the more I tried to compartmentalize everything, the more I realized they were totally all connected, and it was pointless me trying to separate everything, because one issue kind of rolled into another. If I tried to staying busy at work, like I said, not thinking about Kit Kats and things, yet then when things got really stressful at work, I would find myself reaching for the Kit Kat. So it's not it's all quite a big mess, I think, in the end.
Yeah.
It's not possible to... I mean, I did manage to... I think I kept it up for about 5 years, just these two separate identities and everything. But in the end, I think when I finally came out of the closet and stopped trying to hide parts of my personality from other people, that's when I really sort of did tackle all the problems and come out of the other side.
But coming out of the closet now, you're also dealing with a scenario in which, well... how much do I keep privately to myself? How many of my identities do I compartmentalize? I mean, for all I know, you could have a secret blog somewhere about some other pressing issue that I don't know about, nobody else knows about. So what is this relationship between the private and the public? I mean, how do you... I mean, are you done compartmentalizing things at the present time? Or?
Oh, yeah, I'm totally over that now. I don't feel the need to do that anymore.
Just a phase.
But, yeah, very lengthy phase. But I think once you've published... I mean, the book's out now. It's been out for over a year. The most raw, down, dark moments of my life are captured forever in that book.
Sure.
But I do feel a certain detachment from that time in my life now, because writing about it was a good way of kind of, you know, tying up all those loose ends in my own head and feeling like I'd move forward from all that. And now when I write, I do keep a lot back for myself. You know, I think there was almost like a neediness in when I first started writing online, that my world was a lot smaller then. You know, I was in a small town in Australia, and I was very private about my feelings, and the blogs were a way of letting that all out. But now I feel confident enough in myself that I don't need that kind of validation or reassurance from anonymous people that I'm not a freak. I feel I'm at peace with all the aspects of my personality then, whereas back then I think the insecurity and the rubbish self-esteem, there was a lot of part of the writing was making those connections with people and hearing that you're not alone type of...
Yeah.
I got that from both the blogs, I think.
Got it. Well, I mean, there's also something about the permanent nature of having a book that is out there that encapsulates you up into a present moment.
Yes.
And now you're also dealing with something, even currently, with the blogs and whatnot, that is, I suppose, a kind of fluid medium. Something that is perhaps... seems temporary in the process of writing, even though, well, to some degree it is permanent, but it doesn't represent the permanence of, say, a book. And so I'm wondering how the nature of your text being bound in some permanent form has altered the way that you write, and do you have any kind of sense of uneasiness you're sort of expressing, like, well, hey, I'm not that particular person anymore, and that kind of thing?
Yeah, that's why I think I've kept going with the Diet Girl blog, because when you write a book about a weight loss journey, which is only, I feel, only one aspect of the book, but you're kind of frozen at the end of the moment, end of the story, where, yay, happy ending, and everyone's, wow, she lost the weight, she changed her life. Mm-hmm. That's the end, but the story goes on, and I think that's why I have kept going with that blog, to show people that the struggles don't stop there, and that I'm still fallible, and because I do get so many emails from people saying, wow, you're the success story, and
yeah.
I feel so uncomfortable with that label, because the word story implies that there's a nice, neat ending, whereas, you know, life is a sprawling mess, and mine certainly can be.
But do you have any diffidence about the nature of success being applied to you?
Well, I don't know if... I suppose I feel that my success is so shambolic. There's so many ups and downs. Like, yes, I did lose 175 pounds, but I still do battle to keep it off. And,
yeah.
But I think, I've become more comfortable with it, because people have told me, we don't expect you to be perfect just because you were called a success story. Success isn't, there's not a finishing point to it. So if, you know, I've had to come to terms with that, that's what the label means to people. It doesn't mean that I have to be frozen in time at the end of that book. So I'm a bit more comfortable with that than I used to be.
Yeah.
It did, when the book first came out in the UK and I started getting hundreds of emails, I have to admit I did kind of freak out a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I started the blog as a way of connecting with people and trying to find people that were in a similar situation. And so obviously the book took that to a grander scale, and I don't think I was quite prepared for how people would find so much of themselves in the book and reach out back to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the initial plunge of connection exceeded your wildest possible expectations.
Yeah, whereas in 2001, I was connecting to about three people.
Yeah. Got it. Let's talk about the so-called success story or narrative, if to use a more neutral term. You observe early in the book that you had difficulty negotiating the Weight Watchers point system in large part because the points were actually capitalized. This leads me to wonder, because you shifted to numerous programs throughout the book, do you think that some of the institutional trappings and the sometimes conformist idea that emerges from the Weight Watchers program undermines the individual narrative or the individual struggle to lose weight, that I suppose you have to start somewhere in order to figure out how you precisely go about doing this extremely difficult task, which you clearly did.
Yeah, so. I think that's why I had to break free of it after a year, because I didn't, I mean, they have to produce their materials each week. You know, today, this week, we're going to talk about how to cope with a Christmas party or how to start exercising. And not everyone there has their own story. Everyone's fighting their own different battles. And I just couldn't stand sitting there in the little talks every week. And I didn't feel like they were getting to the real raw marrow of the issues that what it takes. They sort of skim along the surface stuff. And yeah, I mean, it's just the nature of the beast, isn't it? I think that's why I got so much out of the blog, because it was more getting right down into the emotional side of things and figuring out why the hell did I get in this big fat mess in the first place. Whereas I don't think Weight Watchers alone, it's a tool, it's an instruction book, but it didn't do anything for my head, which was the biggest problem that needed sorting out.
Yeah, but nevertheless, you also point out later that Weight Watchers gave you the rules, structure, and accountability that I desperately believe in.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, how does, say, a structure of rules relate to one's individual journey? Perhaps people are struck by your narrative and are emailing you because of the book, largely because they see more of an individual story that they can take bits and pieces of and apply to their own particular lives, just as anyone overcoming any struggle has to sort of take bits and pieces from various scenarios.
I think that's what they're calling it Diet Girl, like the whole superhero motif is, and unexpectedly, I mean, I called it Diet Girl because I thought I was kind of being sarcastic. Yeah. Isn't it amazing that I have to lose half my body weight? Can't wait for that one. But it ended up becoming like me figuring out that you had to make your own rules and break the rules and be your own superhero and, you know, take the good bits from Weight Watchers or whatever Crazy Joe's diet that you want to follow and find your own individual way. That was the biggest thing that I ended up learning. That you do have to kind of, learn the rules before you can break them and make up your own, I think.
And I think there's also this interesting aspect of this Diet Girl label. I mean, the American edition of the book, I was shocked to see, because I had read the UK edition a year ago, has this little flip cartoon of you losing weight and then taking off. And so as a result, there's a strange kind of branding nature to what is inherently a human story that reveals a lot of foibles and weaknesses and struggles that you had. I mean, is this possibly a problem for people who are looking to your book, hoping to find the individual quest? Or is it possible that Diet Girl is just as much of a kind of a problematic label as, say, Weight Watchers or Slim Shure or whatnot? Or?
It could be, living up to that superhero persona. But I suppose then you always have the alter ego, that don't you?
the nerd
behind the computer screen, whipping off my glasses and, you know, flying off into the sunset. Yeah.
Well, speaking of starting points, you note that the vampire method, getting out of the house to essentially avoid people and exercise when the temperature wasn't quite so warm, worked out for you, and then it's eventually got you into the gym. Now, for others who were struggling with weight loss issues, is the vampire method really a foolproof kind of scenario, or is this just something that, again, is a case-by-case basis?
I think it all depends on where you live, because I luckily lived in a sleepy town in Australia where if I went for a walk at 5 a.m., there was very little chance of getting knifed or anything.
Yeah.
So it all depends on. You can apply it to the gym, though. I apply the vampire method to the gym by going at like an hour before closing, when all the beautiful people had gone home for the night. So it's just rather than confronting my issues, kind of working around them, you know. I needed to exercise, but I didn't want anyone to see me wobbling down the street, so I do it under the cover of darkness.
Well, you allude to some of the beautiful people kind of in oblique manners throughout the book. I mean, the amazing fitness instructors and all that, you hold reverence for them, but simultaneously, this is one of those interesting issues that you're not absolutely explicit about, and I'm wondering if you could probably delve into the struggle against the beautiful people, the slim people. I mean, you know, they could also be problematic in other ways. They could be, you know, have mental afflictions, but who knows? But this notion of having to battle with these rather perfect body images that, and while you're trying to find your own particular kind of way to be comfortable with your body image as well.
Yeah, I think that comes back to when I was larger. I just had the most inferiority complex. You know, I assumed because someone was smaller than me that they were immediately superior to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like going back in time and just giving myself a good shake now. But it takes a while to realize if you've had years of being told you're not good enough because you're large and blah, blah, blah. Just to realize that that's bullshit. It takes a lot of work and building up your own self-esteem, which I started to do through doing exercise and realizing that I wasn't a big useless lump, which is how I sadly saw myself.
Yeah.
And just realizing that everyone of every size has their own crap to deal with, and just because they may look perfect while they're on the treadmill doesn't mean they are a perfect person.
And
It makes me sad now because I get so many emails from people that are struggling with that same issue, and I'm trying to tell them that you are not your size and neither are they, but it seems to be something you have to figure out for yourself, I think, and a lot of people never quite get there.
Yeah, but certainly societal.
It's hard to ignore, you know, the constant bombardment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a notion of societal folkways and expectations and the like that prevent people from finding this particular individual quest. I mean, by your own account in this conversation and in your book, you were prevented from doing numerous things that you felt that you weren't allowed to do. So is it really on the basis of individual narratives that people are able to essentially overcome these particular problems, or does there need to be some larger societal thrust, like Weight Watchers or Diet Girl or Slim Sure or whatnot?
I just think it must be an individual thing to overcome. I know if I had have kept going with Weight Watchers, I would never have learnt so much about what was... Yeah, I just don't think... I think it's an individual thing.
Yeah. But there isn't any kind of societal remedy. I mean, you're keeping up Diet Girl, and this is probably helping people. People want to contact you.
I think the more of us... I feel in the blogging circles that people are more and more calling bullshit on this kind of stuff that you see in People magazine or whatever. You know, we're figuring out for themselves that it's all airbrushed rubbish that's unattainable, that what you do with your own life is... I just kind of see it coming through in the blogs that I read now, that people are starting to focus more on making themselves happy and rather than living up to unrealistic ideals and setting goals for themselves and just letting go of this idea of you're not acceptable until you're a size 6 or whatever. I do feel like the message is starting to get out there on this sort of underground level.
Well, so basically individual narratives help individual people.
Yeah.
Basically.
I think so, because when I started out, I was sort of desperately Googling where are the real people's stories. You know, I could go buy some celebrity's memoir about how I lost 20 pounds with a crazy diet. That doesn't speak to me, you know. But the more of us that are out there telling it, the real people's stories, I think the more realistic view is coming through. I mean, there's a whole table at Barnes & Noble now, apparently, for real-life weight loss stories, which I thought... That's crazy.
Yeah. I want to also ask you about the use of the spreadsheet to compile a number of statistics. You point out that the statistics gave you the same cheap thrills I used to get from a jumbo bag of marshmallows, which leads me to wonder whether Excel has certain kind of appetital remedies. But it seems to me in scenarios like this that you were basically replacing one particular desire or craving or want for another, and is really it was almost as much a matter of reprogramming, so to speak, how one approaches one's everyday sort of existence. I mean, this is a very quirky way, I suppose, to do it with the spreadsheets. But why did the spreadsheet replace the marshmallows? I'm curious.
I think it's a matter of like knowing what personality you are, and I know that I'm an obsessive type. There's always got to be something in my life that I completely obsessed with, and I seem to substitute food for being obsessed with my whole weight loss campaign, and then I had to go through a whole phase of realizing I've just substituted one obsession for another. I need to find healthier obsessions and moving on from the... I mean, I used to like track how much weight I'd lost, how much I had to go. If I could lose X by Y, I'd be this weight by the 25th of January. And then having to move forward to... Then I sort of got obsessed with exercise, but that was a more healthy way. I'm too far too lazy to be unhealthily obsessed with exercise. But just finding, I really think it is to do something like losing a shitload of weight, it is reprogramming your whole life. And from going from someone where eating was everything to me, you know, it was what I did with my time. It was what it's where all my thoughts were, you know, it was where I sought my escape from all my problems. It was just reprogramming and finding new things to throw myself into. And that's what I constantly have to do now.
Yeah.
Whether it's the writing or exercise or traveling, you know.
But simultaneously, there is something fallacious about the human spirit, because you can say to yourself, oh, I'll lose X number of pounds by X date. But that's not the way that humans always work, because we're not nearly as mechanical, mathematical, and precise as that. And so it's very interesting
as
to me
I
that
discovered.
You would. Yes, exactly. So how, at what point during these 5 years did you really understand that losing weight was not this mathematical equation? And how did the spreadsheet factor into this transition from hard statistics to something that's a little bit more realistic in terms of how one goes about this?
I think the turning point started to come when I left Australia and moved to Scotland.
Yeah.
And I think it was the physical distance from my old life and my old... When I was still in Australia, pretty much Operation Lardbust was my whole life. That was... I felt like I had to complete that before I could move on with the rest of my life. But even like the very first moment I arrived in Scotland, it was just sudden... The world just suddenly got huge overnight, and it brought things into perspective for me, and I didn't fill in my spreadsheet for months. I didn't have a computer, and it just kind of made me think, whoa, you know, I don't need to be like this to lose this weight. I don't have to. It doesn't have to be everything to me. I started, you know, going out to the pub and doing all these traveling things that I always thought I have to do once I'm skinny, that I'd put off. Well, I was waiting for my life to really begin, and then. It was the transition starting right there, just realizing that I didn't, in order to be successful, it didn't have to be the only thing going on in my life.
It was okay
to make mistakes, and it was okay not to be perfect every week. I could have a pint of beer and still be successful.
You couldn't go home again, that essentially you had to actually leave home in order to figure out.
I had to just physically remove myself from that little
space. Do you think that this is largely the case for people who are trying to lose weight, that they become so... insulated from anything beyond, say, the interior, that they have to actually go somewhere else or to another city or even to do things that are dramatically different in order for them to kind of pinpoint who they want to be? That this is...
I think so, because I find with so many people I know that have had weight problems is you see your whole life through these fat goggles. You know, you think that is the most important quality about you, that your life, your happiness is sort of hinging on whether you can lose this weight or not, and just to realize that it doesn't, that you are not the size of your butt. That was such a revelation to me. It sounds so, for people that haven't struggled with it, it must sound so ridiculous, but it was just like the weight lifting off my shoulders when I came over to Scotland and just saw, wow, it really doesn't matter. Yes, I'm getting smaller and healthier, but it's not everything. That was a huge moment for me.
I also should point out, while we're talking about identity, you have a number of fabricated newspaper stories littered throughout the book, and this seems to me almost a way to atone for the lack of conventional media coverage to your particular dilemma. I'm curious how this arose, that you almost needed to create, speaking back to the compartmentalization of identities that we were talking about before, you almost had to create this additional media structure, or this additional way of acknowledging what you were going through and the importance of what you were going through these particular newspaper stories.
Yeah, I think that was part of me being quite a modest person and being afraid if I crowed too loud about my success, I'd be run over by a bus the next day. It was kind of like hiding it in the newspaper genre, putting my journalism degree to use. It just kind of, it was a fun way of just showing off that I'd got some success, and another way of kind of hiding. I think you've hit on that quite well.
Yeah. But why did you hide initially with the diet?
It's the fear of failure. It was because I had such a long history of trying to do something about my weight and failing miserably. Hiding behind that, by having this anonymous blog, I could share my triumphs and setbacks, but in a very controlled way. Only people that I knew could see it, who I told about could read it.
Yeah.
Because people found it through Google searches, it was people that were in the same boat that related to it. So it was a very controlled way of me talking about the part of my life that had caused me the most grief and that I struggled with the most, because I always figured if I told people about what I was going through, that I was doomed to failure, you know, but it was ended up being the opposite.
But you had a great success in the first year. You shed a lot of pounds. And so you have 5 years of this, and you still felt terrified of people discovering this real condition? I mean...
It bemuses me in hindsight that I felt that way, but I was so ashamed of myself that I was 23 years old and, you know, I was the largest size you could buy in the shops in Australia. Being in Australia where half your life is at a barbecue or a pool party, it was not a happy place to be. And it wasn't until I started writing that I actually acknowledged just how miserable that had made me. And I didn't want... I just didn't want my loved ones knowing that that's what it was like for me, that's how miserable I was, that I'd never let them know that's what was really going on. When they eventually did find out about the blog, I mean, when I decided, I was contacted by a magazine to do a story, and that's how it sort of came out in the public. And by then I lost enough weight that I kind of felt this is something I should be sharing with people. It's not something to be ashamed of, but it just took so long to get over the years of thinking about yourself that way. It takes a lot of writing and time just to put all that aside and realize how unimportant it really was.
But before this editor contacted you, you had no intention of telling anybody that you knew about
this? No, it's almost like you have this fantasy in your head. It's like I think earlier in the book I mentioned that I always had this fat camp fantasy where I'd get kidnapped and taken away to a secret fat camp and I'd return to society as a slimmer, better person. And, you know, it was almost like a long version of that I would lose all the weight and I'd be miraculously happy and a better person. And, of course, I figured out that that's all crap.
But
I think by that point I just started to realise that it didn't matter, that it wasn't something to be ashamed of. I mean, I don't know how many people that I'd hidden the blog for have come up to me and said, you know, I struggle with other problems, maybe not be a weight problem, but I've got secrets too. I wish you'd told me what you're going through. I wish I could have helped you. And I feel terrible now because, you know, it did put strain on a few friendships that they felt that I couldn't talk to them. But that's just where I was back then. You know, I wasn't a happy person, whereas now I'm like, hey, buy my book, it's all in there.
Well, the odd thing is that even though you weren't, by your own admission, a happy person, the prose itself is very, very ebullient. I mean,
I was an unhappy person, but knowing that deep down I was a happy person, that it was just a matter of scratching. I think that's why I think the writing helped me realize that I didn't have to be that unhappy person.
To some degree, then, it seems that Diet Girl was also a way for you to find your voice in a way that you couldn't quite maybe find your voice with What's New Pussycat? Or...
Yeah, because I didn't hold anything back with Diet Girl, and the more I wrote, I mean, I look back at some of the earlier blog entries and I can barely recognise the writing style because it was so hesitant and just complete lack of confidence. The sentence is just shorter and really tentative, and then you can start to see it, this confidence start trickle through, and the ability to laugh at myself, to laugh at my setbacks and bounce back, and just the momentum starting to build and feeling such more enjoyment from the writing, even when it wasn't going well. It's such a cliche, but it was rather therapeutic.
Yeah. Well, I'm also curious, I mean, this is an obvious question, but how much of these entries were changed for the book? I mean, there had to have been some editorial decisions. What degree of adjustments were there made for printed form?
Well, a lot of adjustments had been made quite in the earlier stages because there were a lot of stuff I hadn't written about because I had a bad habit of, in the early years, when things went wrong, I would stop writing, you know. It's very common in the diet blog genre that if someone's missing, it's presumed fallen into a bag of crisps, you know. Yeah. They've gone very quiet. I know what's happened here, which in my case, yes, I had to go back and fill in a lot of blanks. So some of the entries, I had initially tried writing it in like a more of a novel style, and then I realized it didn't work as well because some of the stuff that I'd written at the time, that's exactly how I was feeling. It was raw, and it didn't work as well when I tried to fiddle with that. So a lot of put a figure on it, but there is quite a lot of stuff that is straight from the blog, just rejigged,
yeah,
and polished up. But it, you know, if something was as good as it was, I left it.
Yeah, but is that entirely honest to your particular struggle? I mean, what degree of change was there in place for these earlier entries?
Oh, very, very little. I'm only talking about like gaps being filled in.
Oh, got it.
Because pretty much, I just would write how I was feeling, and I think that's what people will want to read. I don't want to write it with any sign of hindsight. I want to put it out there as it was. As it was happening, because that way you can see how I changed over time.
One thing we haven't even talked about is the notion of chronicling your friends, your eventual husband, Gareth.
Yes.
This is interesting to me because most of this begins to happen maybe like halfway through the book. Suddenly the focus is less on yourself and more on these people who are inviting you in, Rory and Jane holding the Vegemite parties and the like. It's interesting to me that you did this. Did this sort of come in with the confidence? Why did you begin to chronicle other people? Was it a matter of, I suppose, figuring out where your place was in relation to the outside world later on, that this actually helped you shed off the last of the pounds? Or?
It did, because I was, the first year or two, it's pretty much just me looking into my navel, because as I was saying before, my world was a lot smaller, and all of a sudden everything got interesting, and I was such a recluse at the start, you know. I didn't want to go out, I didn't want people looking at me, and then I kind of got thrown out of my comfort zone when I moved to Scotland, and I was meeting people and all their lives and experiences, and it suddenly became so much more fun writing, because I had all these things were happening. It wasn't just me reporting on my way in every week. I think that did help the weight loss efforts, just purely because I wasn't so obsessed with it anymore. I could be more flexible and not beat myself up for mistakes. And the blog probably got a lot more pleasant to read because it was more fun, more happening.
It occurs to me now, in thinking about Gareth essentially solving the immigration problem, that there was just as much of a kind of institutional aftermath with this particular decision as there was with the Weight Watchers early on. I'm wondering if you've considered this potential connection and what this potential, it could be called by a crueler person, I suppose, entrapment or whatnot, but nevertheless.
Well, he has called it entrapment on a few occasions. Yeah, or desperation for a nice love angle in a book, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you planned it all along, didn't you? You need to have the love interest in the book. Yeah.
Well, the notion of this decision, let me help you out here. The notion of this particular decision is interesting because it came from the same idea of starting with a system that helps you improve your condition, just as this helped you stabilize your particular relationship here.
Yes.
So I'm wondering, is this just your innate personality here that you need to have some sort of, I guess, codex to some degree, or some subconscious codex that then helps you? Okay, well, this is what we need to do.
Yeah, I guess it's the fear of deportation, but now you've put it that way. I hope Gareth doesn't listen to this. Even more suspicious.
Yeah. You also write about the exhaustive list of things that you didn't do because you believed yourself to be too fat, pointing out that you waddled away from job opportunities, roles in school plays, writing gigs, concert tickets, boyfriends, holidays, and party invitations. Is part of the solution encouraging those who are overweight to essentially do more things, and not just about getting out into the world, but just essentially saying, look, your options here aren't limited to just staying around the house, watching television, eating, the like. It's also a matter of just like, you know, you are just as qualified for these notions as anybody else.
Oh, absolutely. That's something I'm always telling people. Every single person that writes to me, I'll say, look, stop putting your life on hold. You know, you do these things if you want to lose weight, fair enough, but don't let it hold you back, because I wasted the prime of my 20s doing just that. That was it's hard to looking back at that list of all these things I didn't do, like being 15 and not accepting a year's exchange in Japan, because I thought, oh, I'm going to be so much bigger than those delicate Japanese people. I mean, now I'm thinking, you idiot. Why didn't you do that?
But this
whole idea. So many people that do that. That's one thing that one topic in the book that I get the most emails about is people saying, you made me realize how much I'm putting my life on hold. And we're talking people that don't necessarily have a weight problem at all, that they're just so obsessed with their appearance and thinking that they're not worthy of love or adventure and experiences. And that makes me really sad. I thought it was just me being completely in my own little world, but it's surprisingly very common.
But you're using the word waste in relation to your 20s. Now, it could also arguably be said, well, no, actually, I used my 20s like anybody else. I got my shit together.
I guess you're right.
I essentially figured out, well, what I need to do in my 30s, which many people in their 20s don't know that's really the kind of apprentice period for who you really are in your 30s. A lot of people like that. So I don't know if, do you feel, in light of this framing, that you wasted your 20s? Or?
Well, I think when I first started doing stuff, for lack of a word, I think, wow, why did I wait so long? But now in hindsight, I think, everyone I know spent the early part of their 20s just making mistakes and experimenting and doing. You don't figure it out until you hit your 30s, I don't think. Well, I personally didn't. So I look back at myself. People often have said to me in interviews, you know, do you regret that you spent your university days at home with a bag of chips? And I was like, well, that's where I was at the time, and if I hadn't been through all those experiences, I don't think I'd be half as happy as I am now. I think you have to screw things up before you figure out the way forward.
Or perhaps you appreciate the more virtuous acts in life if you essentially go completely nuts on the vices, I suppose.
Yeah. Yes, I'd have the tendency to go from one extreme to the other.
Yeah. Do you fear perhaps veering, speaking of extremes, do you think you're grounded enough right now to prevent yourself from going into extreme edges? How do you balance now, I suppose, the natural anarchy of life with this regimen that you're still on? I mean, do you fear slipping or veering into it? I mean, how do you essentially grapple the wild reins of life, so to speak, when there is this issue underlying everything?
Yeah, I really think because I went so far to the extreme, like being 23 and 350 pounds, I think that's pretty extreme. I think I pushed so to the limit then, and I've learned so much through 8 years of blogging about it that I feel like I know myself really well, and I recognize when life gets crazy. I know what I'm like. I know what I tend to be like, and I know how to handle it now. I don't want to become so straight and narrow that I lose my edge, you know. I just feel such a calmness in my life now, like in a good way, not in a boring way. I feel like I went through so much in that journey, that whole saga, and I just feel equipped to handle things now. Life has been really chaotic in the past couple of years, but I kind of roll with it now, whereas before it would have been my signal to throw my hands in the air and surrender. So I just kind of take it as it comes now. I feel very mellow. I'm not medicated anymore. I'm not medicating myself with food either. But I just think the whole experience has made me who I am. I hate that's such a horrible cliche of a phrase, but it is, you know. And when I finished writing the book, it was just kind of like not closing a door, but just sort of coming to a, that's what happened to me. That's how I got where I am today, and I'm cool with it.
Well, Shauna, thanks so much for taking the time. It was a pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you very much.
All right.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. Pussycat, pussycat, I've got flowers and lots of hours to spend with you. So go and powder your cute little pussycat nose. Pussycat, pussycat, I love you.